Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet River Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.
Keep it locked with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 105.7. Now here's Dan and Mike.
And welcome back to Sports Talk with Mike Pratt and Dan Issel on ESPN Louisville, 680, 105.7. And we're very happy to welcome another Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer, and the man who was able to finally bring an ABA championship to Louisville, Coach Hubie Brown. Coach, how are you this morning?
Fine, thank you.
We really appreciate you being with us. I'd like to start. I believe you were an assistant coach in Milwaukee when was it John Y who came and recruited you to coach the Colonels?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I was an assistant in Milwaukee in 73 and 74. And then an opening happened at Kentucky, and John Y. Brown called, and the interview, et cetera, and so forth. And that's how it happened.
And of course, you came in, and the Colonels had a pretty decent team before you got here. But you were able.
That's an understatement.
you were able to put it all together and finally get us over the hump and win that championship. What do you remember about that championship season, Coach?
Well, first of all, it just wasn't UB Brown coming. Stan Laubach came as an assistant coach. I needed someone who had coached or played or what in the ABA at that time. So Stan was an assistant coach, so he came with me. And then we had four new players. People forget that back at that time in 75, there were only 10 players on the team, and we brought in four new players. So along with that and a new coaching staff, and then naturally, you had three Hall of Fame players there, and Dan Issel and Artis Gilmore and Louis Dampier. It all was able to mesh.
Coach, I was blessed to play for four different coaches who are in the Naismith Hall of Fame, and they all had different strengths. But I tell people, as far as prepared for going into a game, you were the best coach I ever played for. Yeah, thanks to Stan. That was way before tape. You looked at every play, or he charted every play. And when we got ready to play a team, you knew exactly what plays had been successful and what plays hadn't the last time we played that team. It was amazing how prepared you were.
Well, Dan, that's, as you know, you can do all the preparation you want, but you have to have the assistants tuned in. And Stan was the perfect guy to be the assistant coach with us. He added so much to the philosophy and how we should play different teams, and then also star players during the course of a game. But we all know that back then you had to be prepared because all teams were running different offensive sets, whether they had three, four, five different sets with two, three, or four different options to get their best players high percentage shots in their best areas. You had to be prepared. And if you didn't, you were cheating the team itself, but you were cheating the rising potential of each player that played for you. for them giving you everything that they had night in and night out. And at practice, you had to then understand that you owe them, that their potential has got to be developed, and then put it into what we were running offensively and defensively. But I tell everyone, no matter who asks me, it's been 46 years, the greatest team I ever coached was that team in 1975, because we had the inside game, we had the outside game, we had the transition game, the defense was outstanding. And what a lot of people don't remember, I think during the year we scored 108 and gave up 92. And then in the playoffs, we did exactly the same thing again. So that was an incredible differential, because in NBA, if you have a differential of 10, you're dominating. Well, that's how good that team was. And we'll be talking more, but I just wanted to bring out that point. That was a great team because we had a strong five-man starting team and then an extremely quick second unit that changed the different way that we played throughout the game.
UB Mike Pratt here. How you doing?
Hi, Mike. I was a big fan of yours when you were at Kentucky. Well, don't tell us a lot.
I won't. Thank you. Thank you. You're a kind man.
When I was at Charlotte coaching down there in the early 80s, you were at Atlanta. Mike Fratello was your assistant. So, Dan, we called down to Atlanta, and UB was so kind. Yeah, come by. They had an exhibition game in Charlotte, and they were going to have shoot-around and then go to the hotel and then play the game that night. And I don't know who you were playing, but I do remember you had a guy named Danny Roundfield at the forward spot.
Oh, terrific player.
Yes. And
well,
so,
Dan Issel remembers that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's funny, I couldn't tell you anybody else on that team, but he had played at Central Michigan when I was at Charlotte. We made our Final Four run, so I did remember him. But here's the point, and Dan knows this because he played for you, but I think people ought to understand this. Sometimes in the pros, shoot-arounds in the morning at that point in the basketball world weren't as detailed maybe as they are now. So we went to shoot-around. UB was so kind. Fratello was so kind. And we watched, took my one assistant. We watched, I think you may have gone over an hour, UB, but it was detailed. And in this, it was almost like, yes, it was training camp. Yes, it was exhibition. But this practice, Dan, was just like a two-a-day mm-hmm. in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
As a young coach, I always remember that and appreciate you allowing me to watch practice.
Well, the other assistant was Frank Layden.
Oh, yeah,
Frank
okay.
Layden and Mike Fratello. And then going back to that time, we were able to get Danny Roundfield in my second year in Atlanta, because Dan remembers him when we played Indiana in a championship. Danny Roundfield was a backup, or the following year, 76, he joined that team. He was a backup at power forward. So his contract ran out, and we were able to get him. Now, he was an all-star player a number of years in the NBA. And at 6'8", he could shoot outside, he could run the post, he could post up. He was an outstanding shot blocker and defensive player. And he was one of our players that made the All-Star team. And the other forward was John Drew. And then we had a guard by the name of Eddie Johnson, who played for Auburn. And those three kids were able to play in the All-Star game. But I appreciate that, Mike, because, you know, people say, what's the difference between today and yesteryear? Well, yesteryear, the guys understood that when they signed the contract, in the ABA you played 84 games, in the NBA you played 82, and you try to show up every night and play, and you flew commercial, you carried your own bags, and we stayed in three-star hotels. Now, they do not touch a bag, as you know. They stay in five-star hotels. And they have charter flights, and they have three different meals on the flights, and everybody is tired. Everybody's tired, and they need a night off, and we can't play them in back-to-backs. And then they say, well, this guy's out and that guy's out. Well, maybe all of the injuries today, I can't remember a hamstring or a groin in all the years that I coached, 17 years in the pros. All right? Now a hamstring and a groin are like automatic. You can take two games off or three games off. Well, this is me now. I'm old school thinking. Because when I broke in with two guys who I think everyone can remember. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar is going to win the MVP for the third time in 5 years. And Oscar Robertson is going to leave the game after his incredible career. And when I went there, I could not believe the speed of the double sessions that they practiced at. I'm coming from high school and college, and I just can't believe the practices. So our practices were nothing more than a mirror of what I was brought into the league about. And what I learned was that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and Oscar Robertson practiced and played just like the 15th or the 12th guy on the team at that time. I didn't know any better because I got in with a team that got to the finals and had great players, and I was just overtaken by their questioning of getting better within the scouting reports, et cetera, and so forth. And I just want to say one other thing. I know I've taken up a lot of time here. People say, well, what was your job? I said, well, there was only two coaches, head coach and assistant. I said, we'd practice every day from 10 to 12, and then I would go drive out to the airport from Milwaukee, and if I couldn't fly nonstop to a game, I would drive to Chicago, an hour and 10 minutes, and fly from Chicago. Scout the game, fly back on a red eye, because back then every city had red eyes.
Yep.
Fly back, and then get my car, drive home, and be at practice the next day. Now, when I took over Memphis, my first meeting, I walked in, we had five assistant coaches and two workout guys, and there wasn't room at the table to have a meeting. You know what I mean?
You talk about those changes, but let me just go back a second if you've got a few minutes, UB, and you played it.
Listen, we can talk all morning. I enjoy talking to you guys. You know that.
You're the best, UB. Yeah,
you are terrific. Niagara, you played there. Then you went into the Army, and you came back, got your master's at Niagara. And then you've had your own basketball journey since then. And I've got a question about one of your stops. You were at William & Mary, am I right?
That was my first college. I was a high school coach at two different schools for 8 years. And then I went to William & Mary for 1 year. And then the opening at William & Mary was the freshman coach, became the head coach at Rhode Island. And then I was the freshman coach. Chuck Daly was the assistant, and Vic Bubas was the head coach at Duke at that time. When he became the vice president of Duke, Bucky Waters, who was an assistant with him for 6 years, was at West Virginia. And he left West Virginia and came back to Duke as the head coach. And then I went into the NBA because Larry Costello was the head coach in Milwaukee, and we played together at Niagara. And he gave me the break to open up and then get a master's and a doctor's degree in basketball, because the 2 years that I spent there opened up my eyes to creativity and also to organization. And understand, I'll never forget the first day we're standing at practice of the double session in a little college, John Carroll. And there's nobody in there but Wayne Embry, our general manager.
Mm-hmm.
So we're standing, the guys are warming up. So Larry says, now listen, you're in charge of players 9, 10, and 11, and 12. So the two guys who are laughing understand this, okay? So I said, what do you mean by that? He said, because they're going to be pissed off every day. And I said, what do you mean? He said, well, we're only going to play 8 guys. And they only get in at garbage time. Now, all 4 of them are very good. He said, and they're going to be complaining because they don't understand that they're not good enough to be in the top eight. So I said, okay, little did I know that you were like a priest in confession every single day with four guys who were mad. And even though they're playing behind Bobby Danridge and Kareem and Lucius Allen and Oscar Robertson, it didn't matter because minutes, we all know at the pro level, means money, all right, and also your professional development. So it was just incredible the first day.
Will you be in this day and age, all the young assistants, they want to be head coaches as quick as possible and get to the money, as you said. But why I ask you about your progression is your last stop at Duke, Vic Bubas, he's one of those guys that's a legend in the ACC. And you and Chuck Daly, I mean, that was one hell of a staff.
Well, we were playing for the ACC championship game. Now, back then, you had to win your conference tournament or you did not go to the NCAA tournament.
Yep.
So my first year there, we're playing Carolina with Bob McAdoo and Charlie Scott and those guys in the final game. So at 10 o'clock in the morning, there's a telephone call to Vic Bubas that Bob Cousy is retiring at Boston College, and would Chuck Daly be interested in the job? Now, we're going out the door, okay, to go to the shoot-around. So Vic's got to make a decision. So he says, Chuck, listen, you stay here. Herb Rudoy, the agent, who was a Duke agent and was making his way, become a famous agent at that time, was there. So he said, listen, you guys work it out with the athletic director. So I'll be damned. By the time we came back from the shoot-around, and now we have a meeting with Chuck, he's already the new coach of Boston College. Boston College. Now, think about that. He never even went there. Okay, he just took the job. It was a great job because from there he went to Penn, and then from Penn he was in the top five, a number of years before he became Billy Cunningham's assistant with the Philadelphia Warriors. Then his first job was the Cleveland. People forget that he was at Cleveland because it was such a short time period. But Dan, he will remember the guy that owned the team was a little bit on the weird side, okay? So Chuck didn't last very long there before he landed in Detroit.
Ted Stephan. Yep. Wow. There's a name from the past, Hubie.
Now, Hubie, most of our young listeners won't remember your terrific coaching career, but know you only as the color analyst for the NBA games. And I might be a little biased, but I think the best color analyst. You're so concise in what you have to say. You don't make the game about you. You make the game about the basketball. That has to be as satisfying a part of your career as the coaching.
Well, I think the way we approached it is like doing clinics. When you do clinics for coaches, you never underestimate the IQ of the audience. You have no idea. There might be 1,000 coaches, like in Vegas when we do it, there'd be 4,000 coaches, male and female. Well, the level of their basketball IQ, you never want to insult the IQ level. So now it comes down to why are you doing something? Why is it happening on TV? Not what you just saw, because you just saw it as an audience. You want to know why that happened. And we all know that back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, where continuity was the factor of the game, because once they took away hand-checking, they've made a freeway to the basket. So it's not the same level of basketball. So when you want to explain it to people, back then you had to have offside continuities, whether they're back screens, down screens, staggered screens, etc. So you want the fan to understand what is going on, not just with the basketball. So my approach always was to try to short sentences, understanding that the fan can only retain so much so quick, and then also why something happened. And do you mind if I tell you a story? Do we have time?
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Hubie, you've got we're so thrilled to have you on. You've got all the time you want.
All right. I got fired in Atlanta after 5 years because I took a stand and I lost because that's one of my things when I talk to coaches. Don't overestimate who you think you are when management tells you that they're going to do something one way and then you fight it and naturally you lose. So I get a telephone call from Eddie Doucette, who used to do the radio and TV for the Milwaukee Bucks. He calls. He's working for the station called USA. USA used to do Thursday night NBA doubleheaders, then Major League Baseball doubleheaders on Thursday nights, and then on the weekends, they did a lot of college football, basketball, baseball, etc. So Jim Zrake, they call me. I go with an interview with Eddie Doucette. And they say, look, we'd like you to be an analyst. I've never done radio or television. So they said, well, we'll have you do a doubleheader with Eddie Doucette and, in Washington. And then you will do the first game with Al Albert. Everybody remembers Marv Albert, yep. But Dan remembers Al Albert because I know he lives in Denver.
Yeah, longtime announcer for the Nuggets.
That's right, and a wonderful guy, terrific guy. He had great patience with me. And the second game was Eddie Doucette with another guy that played in the ABA and was an outstanding player, Steve Jones. Mm-hmm. That was the doubleheader. So we did this for 1 year. And at the end of the season, CBS asked me to go on with Kevin Lockery to do a pregame and a halftime and a postgame show during the playoffs. Well, then at the end of that, I was fortunate to get the Nick job. So then at the end of that, that opened up with CBS, et cetera, and so forth. But here's what I wanted to tell you. I'm working with CBS 3 games. I had to move from Atlanta to New Jersey. So the head guy, the head producer, calls me in, and he says, this guy's a very famous guy, and he's the head man. So he says, I want to meet you at lunch across from CBS. I said, fine. So I go. So we walk in. I'm nervous because I'm out of NBA. I'm trying to make it in television now. So he sits me down, and we sit down at this famous lunch place. And he said, look, before we start, he said, I want to talk to you about a couple of things. I said, what's that? He goes, why do you always wear white and blue shirts? And I looked at this guy, and you know, if we weren't on national radio or TV, I'd tell you what I was really thinking. Okay? And I said, well, because we wear they wear that navy blue jacket.
Yep.
And we had a patch over the pocket that had CBS basketball. And so I said, so white and blue, you know. Well, I would like for you to wear, think about wearing striped shirts. I said, okay. Now, I'm nervous now. You got to understand, this is the boss. And he says, no, look, John Madden is doing football for us right now. And Tim McCarver is doing baseball. Now, both guys have a tendency. They're very funny. They get in and they teach, and they're funny, and they also explain what's going on. So I'm looking at him. So he said, now, I know you can be funny if you want to be. He said, but I would like to hear more humor, et cetera, and so forth. Now, my answer goes back to your question about television.
Yep.
I looked at him, and I bit my tongue, and I said, Well, in an NFL football game, the ball is snapped, and the announcer goes back, and he talks, oh, there's a pass, 8-yard gain, second and two. With that, John Madden comes in, and A, he has 20 to 25 seconds. He has a replay. I said he has, if he missed the play, he's got a replay. I said then he can explain and he can teach. Now in baseball, Tim McCarver has a pitch comes in, the catcher catches it. By the time he throws it back, also now McCarver comes in, he has a replay, and then he can talk whether he didn't catch what kind of a pitch it was. He can see it again as he's talking and explaining. Now, I bite my tongue. I said, look, in an NBA game, when there is a basket, Dick Stockton will give you the score. I have 5 to 8 seconds from the baseline up to half court, up to the three-point line to A, to tell the reason why the play happened, be witty and tell something very funny. And I said, by the time I finish 20 to 25 seconds, there will be a shot at the other end and then down to the other end and back. We might have three baskets.
You're absolutely right.
And he goes,
well, you're
I think it's time to order.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
So I go home and my wife says to me, how'd it go? I said, I don't know if I'll have a game on Sunday.
Well, Hubie, you're the best. We certainly appreciate your time, and we love that you came on with us, and thank you for my championship with the Kentucky Colonels.
Marv, I mean, Dan, listen, every time we see one of the guys, you know, everybody still has the rings. And
yep.
It was a wonderful time, an incredible moment in my life to be with you guys. The talent was there, the execution, and everything that we overcame was just very inspirational in my career. And I'll never forget Louisville or the players that play for us, because I'd never be where I am today without that. It was just a fantastic experience.
You're the best.
I hope you want to call, just call. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks.
Appreciate
a bunch,
it, Hubie.
Okay.
That was wonderful.
Yeah. He's so good. I mean, half the announcers, when I watch a game, I've got to turn the volume down.
Yeah.
But Hubie is so much fun to listen to. We should have asked him when his next game is, because he's still going strong.
He's probably going to be on Sunday or Saturday.
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay.
All right. Let's take a break, process. This is Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt. And Hubie Brown, Louis Dampier, all have been on. We've got some things we want to wrap up the show with, and we'll be back. ESPN Louisville, 680 1057.
You're locked on Sports Talk with Dan Issel and Mike Pratt, right here on ESPN 680 and 1057. Now here's Dan and Mike.
Well, Hubie Brown and Louis Dampier would appreciate some Motown. They are of that vintage, Mr. Issel. They are of that vintage.
Yeah, two Hall of Famers that had a great deal to do with the success of the Kentucky Colonels here. That is for sure.
Well, Louis, Mr. Colonel. I mean, Daryl Carrier.
Yep. All I remember is we used to they used to give. When Louis or Daryl or anybody hit a three-point shot.
The gong.
The gong with the marathon oil, and we would get, they would get, I think, 10 gallons of gas for every three-pointer they had. And so they would all throw it in a pool, and all the players would split the gas. And so thanks to Louis Dampier and Daryl Carrier, I don't think during the season, I didn't have to spend a penny for gas. They kept the whole team in gas with those three pointers.
And they did. And of course, gas was only about 50 cents, but it still meant a lot.
Exactly.
You didn't pay taxes on it.
Exactly. Michael, I want to talk a little bit about horse racing. We are 2 weeks and 2 days away from the greatest 2 minutes in sport, and that is the Kentucky Derby. Churchill announced that they are opening the front side for workouts. You can go out there in the morning. You can take your refreshments. You can take a chair. They do have a grill that's open if you choose to do that. But I think, you have to wear your face mask and you have to practice social distancing. But I think this is probably, number one, a way to expose the races to the fans and the horses to the fans, but also to kind of clean up the backside, because the backside over the last few years has gotten very, very crowded. And so they're probably wanting some of those people to come around and watch the activity from the front side.
And it is so much fun to go to the backside.
Yeah.
I mean, prior to this COVID thing, I mean, people all over. Some people out there seriously watching the horses, okay? And some people just socializing.
Yeah,
it was like
exactly.
a party for some.
Wouldn't know which end of a horse bit.
Amen.
This Saturday will be 2 weeks from the Derby, and most of the Derby horses that are on the grounds, not all of them are, will be having their penultimate workout for the Derby. For those of you from Tennessee listening, that means next to last.
oh man, the knives are out.
but one of the horses that'll work this Saturday is Essential Quality, who I'm sure will be the favorite. And I texted Brad this morning because they set aside a
Brad
certain, Cox.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
there you go.
Brad Cox, who trains Essential Quality, who will be the favorite in the Derby, and he also has a filly. I don't think she'll be the favorite. I think the filly that we saw won the Ashland for the Curlin filly that I can't pronounce the name that Todd Pletcher has. I think she'll be the favorite for the Oaks, but Brad has Travel Column. And so I thought I'd text Brad and see when they were going to work out, because I knew it was Saturday. And I was hoping it would be during that time, 7:30 to 7:45, that they set aside to work for Derby and Oaks Fillies. But Brad will be on his way after the works to Oaklawn, because he has Monomoy Girl in the Apple Blossom.
Good horse.
And a couple of horses. There's another $1 million race at Oaklawn on Saturday, Oaklawn Handicap. And Brad has two horses in that. So he has to, after the Travel Column and Essential Quality work, he has to get on an airplane and then get to Hot Springs, Arkansas. And so he texted back and he said they'll be working out at 5:15. Saturday morning. So I'm afraid they're going to have to work out without me. That's a little too early. But if you're an early riser and want to see the Derby favorite workout, he'll be on the track Saturday morning at 5:15.
What's the other big name horse that's with Monomoy Girl out there?
Swiss Skydiver.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. A horse that really a lot of people thought could have won the Derby back a few years ago, right?
Well, she did. Last year, she did win the Preakness.
Right,
And she ran against Monomoy Girl in the Breeders' Cup filly and mare race. And, of course, she was only a three-year-old, and Monomoy Girl is a five-year-old. And she got dusted. I think she finished seventh in that race. But she had an unbelievable schedule last year. She flew all over the place. Ran in all of the big races for fillies, ran in the Preakness, and I think she was just done before that race. So this will be a great matchup. Monomoy Girls, even money on the morning line, and Swiss Skydivers 2-1. I think it's a 6-horse field, but I'm really looking forward to that. That'll be a great race.
It's hard to bet on a horse that's even money.
Well, she won't be even money. She's even money on the morning line.
Three to five?
Yeah.
Two to five, three to five.
In that range, that's what she'll be.
Well, we're going to talk next week a whole bunch of horse racing. You've got some people you're trying to get on, and our good friend Tommy Hammond.
Yep.
And a longtime
NBC announcer for Derby and all of their horse races.
Yeah, wonderful guy. I did a couple basketball games with him. Up in Cincinnati, the NCAA first round, when the NCAA was handling the first rounds back when I think it was 36 or 48 teams, and then they handed it over to CBS or whomever. So Tommy and I did a couple games up there. He's quite a guy. He's a good friend of all of ours. But now, as we go forward today, we've two things. I mean, you may have some more on your list you want to talk about, but I was talking about James Bond.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So I your favorite Bond was Goldfinger.
Goldfinger.
I like Goldfinger a lot. My favorite was You Only Live Twice, but there's not a bad Bond in my mind. Now, here's the question for you, Mr. Issel. Who acted as James Bond? Who was the actor for being James Bond the most?
Well, Sean Connery was the best Bond.
I agree.
And then Pierce Brosnan, was he? And,
yeah, he was. Yeah.
And I'm gagging for the last guy.
Well, how about Roger Moore?
Oh, Roger Moore. Yeah. I would say the obvious answer is Sean Connery, but I'm guessing that that's not right. So I'm going to say Pierce Brosnan.
You know, I tell you what, that the quarterback Rogers is doing Jeopardy. I got to – you need that gig, man. You need to be on Jeopardy.
Did I hit it?
Yeah, no. Well, you're close. Roger Moore did seven times James Bond, and Connery did six.
Huh.
How about that?
So I wasn't even in the first two.
No, you were the show ticket.
It's kind of like betting at Keeneland so far this meet.
How about we talked about the coaches, the coaching carousel.
Yep.
And
yep.
We had your pick was young Walton to take the Arizona job.
Right.
And that, but they had three or four other Terry, Jason Terry, Damon Stoudemire,
Miles Simon.
Miles Simon, yep. All former players.
Right.
And it seems like that's what a lot of schools are doing.
Exactly. And as you say, it's kind of a copycat. That the pendulum has swung that way, and now schools are hiring former players with some tie to the NBA because that seems to help. In the but Arizona didn't go that way.
They went the way of Gonzaga.
Yep,
Tommy Lloyd, a guy that is as I read, I don't know Tommy Lloyd. That's West Coast basketball. You know, we don't get a lot of that here. But he is supposed to be the best international recruiter of all the assistants in the country. Mm. He built that reputation because the Zags have had a lot of international
Absolutely.
Players. A lot of successful international players. So he's moving down to Arizona. What might be more interesting now is who his assistants are. Does he go to the pool of those former Arizona players? I think Terry might be on Miller's staff. I'm not sure. I thought one of the former players. But how he fills out his staff is going to be very interesting.
Yeah, with the situation that Arizona is in, I think they're going to want to get away as far away from Sean Miller's program as they possibly can. So I don't see, if Terry is on his staff, I don't see them retaining anybody that has had anything to do with Arizona basketball the last 12 years.
The other spot that was filled right up the road, we had Mo Egger on earlier with ESPN in Cincinnati and follows all these teams and has for years. And we kind of all agreed, Mo, you and I, that the assistant who played at Cincinnati, who's been with Hugs for like 14, 15 years, that Hugs still had enough juice in Cincinnati to get this guy the job. Again, former player. I don't think this guy played in the NBA, but former player, well-liked, and couldn't get it done. They hired the fellow from UNCG, Wes Miller, who was in contention
for the North Carolina job.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I was
So Hugs doesn't have as much juice as he thought he did.
And that's shocking. That is shocking because I know he got sideways and left and actually got fired when the lady was the president and didn't like him.
And she's no longer there.
She's no longer there. And the AD's no longer there. They got a new AD. who probably has his back to the wall because I think he was responsible for John Brennan's hire. And you can't miss many beats like that at the level Cincinnati's at. So he's got to deliver. This has got to be the right hire. It's some of the questions I read today concerning the job was that Wes Miller, even though he's got some Carolina ties, he doesn't have ties and hasn't recruited heavily. The Midwest is where Cincinnati likes to recruit.
Right.
And some of the opponents in their league are located there. So that's an interesting hire. Growing up in Dayton, Cincinnati with the Big O, Oscar Robertson, Jack Twyman, the two teams won back-to-back championships with Ed Jucker, without Oscar.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, that was the killer. Without the Big O, they came back a year or two later and won back-to-back. And with Hugs revived them when he went there. And they're back to struggling. And it's hard to understand, talking with a friend of mine just this morning about this job. And, you know, has it lost the juice that it used to have? One of the great rivalries was Cincinnati and Louisville over the years. And I've attended a couple of those games. And I don't know. Maybe you couldn't sell an assistant, even though he was a former player of yours. Maybe you couldn't sell that as well as you can. I don't know Wes Miller. I'm not anti-Wes Miller. I'm just trying to think where they're going with all this.
Well, he's been very successful. And so you've got a known quantity there. It's not like somebody's getting the first, that 18 inches from the head assistant to the head coach. That can be a long, long way sometime. And maybe they just felt they needed somebody who had done it and had been successful rather than hiring an assistant coach.
Might be an easier sell.
Yeah. Yeah.
An easier sell. So, yeah.
So now I have a question for you, Mr. Pratt. Yesterday, not only were you appointed czar of landfills for ESPN Louisville, but also czar of the transfer portal.
Yes, sir. I accept both.
And so I had a question. Do you have to transfer and be able to and have immediate eligibility? Do you have to go through the transfer portal, or can you just say, I'm leaving school X and I'm going to school Y and not go through that whole process?
You used to be able to do that, but I reached out to a portal czar of his own. And
He can't be the czar. He has to be the assistant czar.
Okay, he's the assistant.
Okay.
And he told me, no, you have to go through the portal.
Okay.
Period.
All right. So to be eligible right away, you have to go through that process rather than just say, I don't like it here, I'm going there.
And have you been following Kentucky and some of their recruiting issues with people in the portal, grad transfers, and high school guys?
No, why do I have to do that? I sit with the czar for two hours every morning. Why would I have to pay any attention to that?
Well, next week, along with horse racing with Dan Issel, we'll probably have some interesting decisions made by either grad transfers or high school players. And I think it'll be interesting for Kentucky fans to watch how Calipari ends up with who he ends up with. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll give you, just my opinion, an idea of where he's trying to take this program and take it from the one and done, which I think is, for all practical purposes, it's over, right? Would you agree?
It sure hasn't worked. I will admit
it worked
to that.
Early with him, but you can't get Cousins and Wall and Bledsoe anymore. Three guys like that.
Yeah,
I mean, they were all three one and dones and terrific college players, and all have been successful in the pros. But I'm very interested to watch the transition if Calipari does from this philosophy to now taking more high school players and keeping more high school players instead of them being unhappy and leaving. And how deep does he go into the transfer portal? He's been successful with grad transfers, three of them, been very successful. How will this change the perception of Kentucky? How will this change how many guys stay more than 1 or 2 years. I think it's interesting to track. Louisville's going through the same thing. They're in the portal. They got Noah Locke from Florida, and they got a couple other guys.
Now have an extra scholarship with Johnson leaving, so they'll have to fill that position. You were nice enough last night to send me the media interviews with the two transfers, and I was very impressed with them. I mean, both well-spoken kids, talked about working, the work ethic, and they know they have to improve. And it was, you know, it just they're more mature and have a better handle on what's going on than some of these one-and-done kids do.
You would have loved what I saw at a ball game at home. Of course, we did the home games. We didn't travel. So we're sitting there all spaced out and with our masks. We did a show with our mask on. I mean, it was so the teams, both teams are out warming
up. Wait a
up.
Second. You mean while you're broadcasting?
Oh, yeah.
You had to wear your mask?
At the arena, yes. We didn't wear them when we were at home in this little room.
Right.
But, yes, when we were there, we did them with the, with the mask on. How about that? That's why I sounded so bad. But here's what I saw, and you would appreciate this as a big man, as a coach, as a general manager. Both teams are out warming up. Sheboy is down with the Kentucky guys. He's the West Virginia transfer. He's down with the Kentucky guys. So we get to the end of the warm-up period. Both teams leave. And I look at the floor, and he's out there, okay? And he's working on his footwork just by himself.
No assistant coaches
no
with him.
No assistants, no managers, no one throwing him the ball. He's pretending he got the ball. He had his hands out. He's working on his footwork, his drop step, his reverse pivot. Mm-hmm. He did it up and down the foul lane line, and he went out, stepped out to about the short corner area. And I watched this kid do this, and I thought, now, you know what? That's the first time I've seen that. Of course, we haven't had many transfer guys.
Right.
But it showed me that this kid already knew what he needed to improve on and was willing to work on it all by himself.
Yeah. Well, you know, there has to be a degree of maturity there, and that has to help. You know, they have to know that they're in a program now that has a chance to get them to the next level. So if they're willing to work hard and do what Cal tells them, they've got a shot at that.
Another day in the books, Mr. Issel, and tomorrow we have
the A-Train. We our fourth Hall of Famer, Naismith Basketball Hall of Famer, this week. And we'll wrap up our Kentucky Colonel ABA segment with the best big man. Today we had the best shooter in the history of the ABA. Tomorrow we'll have the best big man in the history
of the ABA.
Couldn't
ask for more. Also, Dennis Emery talking a little tennis as Kentucky gets ready for the SEC tournament in tennis. They got a top flight guy, number one tennis player ranked in the country. We'll pick Dennis's mind about that. So all of that tomorrow on Sports Talk. Dan Issel, Mike Pratt, 680 and 105.7.
Have a great day.
Exmark makes the mowers that care for the lawns that set the stage for the backyard life. As the commercial mowers more landscape pros trust, Exmark mowers get you on and off the lawn without compromising cut quality, comfort, or reliability. Exmark, official mowers of the backyard life, starting at $29.99. Learn about the available finance offers and check them out today at The Mower Shop, 7400 Preston Highway, Louisville, Kentucky, 502-969-6433.
Make your life better with a new job at UPS. Join Team Louisville as a warehouse worker, earn $14.50 per hour plus a $175 weekly bonus for some shifts. Search and apply now at upsjobs.com/Louisville. That's upsjobs.com/Louisville.
Bet Rivers Sportsbook has supercharged its iOS app. Download the update today from the Apple App Store and see the difference for yourself. Must be 21 or over to play. Playable only in Indiana. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-9-WITH-IT.